Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
You have repeatedly criticized the Vice President for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland? Are you prepared
to
specifically
do it? I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. Call him. Give me a name. Give me a
white
name.
White supremacist and right proud boys.
Stand back and stand by.
No justice, no peace. I'm in the street screaming, fuck the police. FTP, get your me a false me. The color of my skin ain't a sin, but you choose to hate me. Protect and serve is a myth. Gotta protect myself with the faux fear. This ain't no shit chatter. Black lives matter. We heating up the pan like it's pancake batter. Ride along with me, we gon' bang through the streets, screaming out loud. I can't breathe. We knocking on the door of the White House. Got the president running, turn the lights out. I'm black and I'm proud, and I'm yelling out loud. Hey, give me a pound. Donald Trump is a clown. Hey, I'm telling every one of you cops, we ain't our ancestors. Yeah. Racism gotta stop.
So we take it to the streets. They gon' listen when we speak. The revolution will be televised. So plenty will see. We outnumber these punks. That's definition of Trump. So put your fist in the air to show them all what we want. Dominating people, focus, ready to get it in. No time to smash the loot. We front line where these cops been. Tired of the race of bastards. Tired of behind the fact that bastards catch you in the real disaster. We'll see what happens when it happens. One nail for cap and then the pillar cap back. I can't breathe. Can you hear me? Put the camera down. Fight back. Time to strike back. The future's in our hands. We owe it to our children to have the answer our demands. Cause I know we need a plan, but I stand with my brothers. Cause when we all unite, yo, there's nothing above us. So fuck 45, I got a quote you can tweet. It's power to the people, we the voice of the street.
I'm Malcolm X with a tech on deck. You gotta earn respect. I'm like, fuck the police, they serving neglect. It's the Bloods and the Crips that serve and protect. I'm trying to do them like Dorner, start leaving them wet. No, bitches ain't shit but a pig in a vet. They down us, we down them. They had they knee on George Floyd, now we causing a wreck. He stopped breathing while that bitch kept his knee on his neck. Rich the pink Tupac, he knocking the cops. I'm gonna fuck all 12, like it or not. I'm gonna fuck Donald Trump, we need Barack. And we ain't pulling
Special show right here, man, because one thing about us and what we do, we love reaching out to different platforms. We love building with different people that are in charge of different platforms, because at the end of the day, we're all about unity and unifying dope shows, people that's providing dope content, and bridging that gap, so to speak. Now, before we go on, this show is sponsored by Cocaine's Buddy Boy Entertainment, Jesse's Boutique, Da Vinci Clothing, Core Financial, Fleetwood and the Cotton Pickers. And I also got my host T-Max with the facts in the building.
What it do, y'all. T-Max in the building for another Super Sunday. It's off the cuff. What it do, man. And yeah, like King said, we all about bringing unity in the hip-hop community online for all times.
Yeah, man, because on the line right now, we got the head of Die 4 Radio, and this guy is currently making noise with his podcast featuring a lot of hip-hop and R&B heavyweights. This guy has been one of the sole contributors of the West Coast sound, and man, somebody that I would consider a good friend of mine. And he's going to be joining us with Yuck Mouth probably later on through the show. But in the meantime, let's bring on Dire Lansky to the show. Our good buddy, man.
Yo, salute. What's good with my people, man?
What's good, my man? Long time no see.
The legend, yeah, what it do, man?
What up? You know, and just to chime in on what you were saying about, you know, obviously we are good friends and this and that, but it's dope because, like, you get caught up or I get caught up or whatever, and be like, oh, yeah, I forgot, boom, 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 oh, I got you, oh, I forgot. And it's like nothing, that, you know, like it could have been 2 days since I last talked to you. You know what I'm saying? So I like how, you know,
yeah,
everybody just move and do what they do, and you know what I'm saying? It's just, like you said, it's dope to watch the progression of everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah,
especially,
man, that's always a sign
thing,
of a...
Man, cause...
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with this media thing, man, because it could be a beast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, too, like, what we do, podcasts and, you know, no one really sees the all the outside work that goes into it. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I think this is what music in general, entertainment in general, you know, I talk about a lot of my podcasters, like, from the outside looking in, all people see is, oh, they're talking with known rappers and da da da, and they're just sitting there on the, you know, they think like we just sitting on the phone talking to people and shit, you know what I mean, but record it. But there's actually a, you know, there's a point to what we do. There's, you know, a lot of preparation in what we do, you know what I mean, that they don't see. And the thing that I got to understand, too, is unless you're working for a radio station, everything that we do, we're not getting paid for.
Exactly.
You may have sponsors of this and that, but they don't see all the hard work behind the scenes to actually make a radio show work or podcast or whatever you call it. You know what I'm saying? And it's, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to stay focused. You know, you have to deal with people's schedules. Now, obviously, with COVID, everyone was kind of home, so you saw a lot of people start podcasting and shit because everybody was home and started sending messages and shit. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, before that, when people were on the road and you had to work with other people's schedules, but you have a schedule for when you need to go on the air. And, you know, it's not just easy. It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
Definitely. And to Dyer and King's point, you know, y'all made great points on it because the fact is,
preparation is everything.
You know, the preparation is everything in terms of, one thing about it is when you have a guest on, you want to make sure that they feel welcome, that they feel respected, and then most importantly, that, you know, you're knowledgeable about what you're speaking on with them, whether they are a new artist that you're just beginning to learn about, or they're a veteran legend that, you know, you want to,
yeah,
refresh people on in reference to, you know, their history, their legacy, contributions, everything. Like I said, Dyer, this is not something that everybody can just do when you really understand it, because there's an art, there's a science to it, and then,
yep,
more importantly, there's an education and an execution. Both of you make great points about it, definitely.
And there's a funny story, actually, the homie Money B told me. And,
mm-hmm,
he was going to go on a podcast, and the guy... They, like, their schedules weren't clear, but he kind of lived local, you know what I mean? So they were going to film it and shit like this. And then, you know, Shock had passed away. Rest in peace, Shock G. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then when,
yeah,
he came, or like, right before that or something. So anyways, he was like, well, let me do this now before I go out of town. And he went and did a interview with this dude. And then, you know, he had, like, good equipment and stuff like that. And he started asking questions and kind of pop and this and that. And then Mun had mentioned... one of his own albums, you know, not Digital Underground or Tupac albums. And the dude,
mm-hmm,
was like, oh, you had albums? And Mun's like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Like, you know what I mean? And the dude really said, oh, I didn't know you made any albums by yourself. Like, what?
Oh, my God. Talk about awkward.
So, yeah, and
yeah, that's
like,
called getting pants down.
Mun was like, I was kind of salty at first, but then, you know, I know people don't know no better and realize, you know, he want to ask questions about Tupac. You know what I'm saying? So let's get this shit over. Yeah.
My God, man. But, hey, but y'all want to bring you on, man, and, you know, hopefully Yuckmouth will join us later, man, because it's like I see the progression that you guys are doing when it comes to the media game, man. It kind of like, it's not really like a competitive motivation for us, but more so motivation to like, man, I see you guys doing it. Y'all rounding up the guests. Y'all getting the dope dialogue out there. That makes us get out of bed. You know what I mean? Get out of bed and pump that content up.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, what I'm doing with What's the Word podcast, you know, is I was doing it Instagram Live because of COVID, right? So, and I had been doing it, you know, pre-recording conversations and putting it out, kind of, you know, this and that. But I'm like, yo, as I started to do it through Instagram Live, to me, you know, Instagram owns that. I, you know, if I do want to make money off it, but I can't. And, you know, so as things started to open up, it was like, yo, you know, my boy Mac, shout out to my dude Mac with the Coin Academy. You know, we had everything there. And, you know, yep, it, you know, it's family to everybody there. So Smoke a Lot come there. You know, that's their home for the podcast, the Ballin' Podcast with GoMac and Laidlaw is there. And Mac, in fact, the Coin Academy today had a bulldog-like dog show. You know what I'm saying? With like DJs and all sorts of shit. It's crazy. So, you know, Mackie got behind me and produced the show and tried to make it happen as it happened because the production quality is there now. So we really got to make it happen. You know what I mean? But, you know, good dialogue is good dialogue. Look, you can have all the equipment in the world, you know, whether you're doing a podcast or music or whatever, and if it sounds like shit, it sounds like shit. You know what I mean? It's not about what you have. It's about how you use it. And, you know, I salute Blog Talk. I, as a company, I salute Blog Talk because I started to do Die for Radio years and years ago, and that's really what got me to where I'm doing now. Like, it is actually a dope-ass fucking platform to be sitting here doing this shit. You know what I'm saying? And especially for people that don't have, you know, like, think about people that listen to us. Like, okay, well, I really like that. Like, I want to start my own thing. They can go to Blog Talk and, like, start something, even if it's just with him and his friends, just to get used to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, cause what I like about Blog Talk gives you a lot of creative freedom in a way. Because
absolutely,
we got away with a lot of shit, man. Like, you know, playing a lot of music.
Yes, we have.
I pushed that line. When I first got on here, I pushed that line. I used to be real petty and play some of the... Like, if I had an issue with somebody, I would go in and just play their music any damn way, just to piss them off. Unlike yep. everything, just to do it.
I mean, why?
There's
no sound scans, you know what I mean? So you can't really do anything about it.
Exactly.
But
yep.
I liked it, though, on the flip side of it, when I was doing Dapple Radio on Blog Talk, I loved it because I would have literally, you know, at least 2 to 3 artists a night for a 2-hour show. A lot of times it was 4, you know what I mean? But at least 2 to 3, they would come in, drop a new song, we could play it, dialogue, couple fans got to talk to them, boom, 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 answer questions, this and that, play another exclusive, you know, that's not even out yet type of shit. Like, that's dope to me. And, of course, we can do that, you know, on kind of any platform, especially if it's not out yet. But, you know, I think, too, as far as listeners, what's dope is they can click on the link on their phone, or if they're somewhere where they just have a phone, Wi-Fi shitty, they can call and still listen. You know, it gives you a really easy, and everybody got a phone now. You can listen to Blog Talk on an Obama phone. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you know what I mean? You have to, if a motherfucker say, yo, I couldn't listen to it, you know, and they wasn't doing shit, they just didn't want to.
Yeah.
That's true right there.
And one thing, definitely, and when you look at how it is, man, in terms of the technological advances that have come, you know, we've seen so many people. One thing about it, this is a way to really, really, really reach out in terms of having a broader reach when you're able to interact with artists, you're really ready, you know, you can talk to them. It's something, and the one thing that is great about what all of us do with this is that we really get to make our own rules in terms of how we want to do it. You know, we have no corporate mm-hmm. entities. We can get who we want to get. We schedule it around, you know, of course, because sometimes, you know, corporations try to put schedules on you and deadlines. But then also it can be an aspect about who's popular. Well, maybe you should get this also. I'm like, well, their music is shit. No, we're not going to bring them on.
Yeah, and then that's kind of like the ironic part or the paradox or whatever you would call it, right? Because it's like, I want my show to have substance to it, and guess what?
Right.
If I do it the way I see it and the substance I want, it's not just going to spark like a flame and just keep going. It's going to take time, because I'm not just going to have this popping artist that ain't talking about shit on here, or I'm not just going to have this just for the numbers and I don't know shit about this dude. You know what I'm saying? And so there really is the, you know, the sacrifice, I guess you could say, you know, the, you know, what intention do you want from your show? Because we do also, and I don't mean to be all like this, but if any of our shows, right, really mm-hmm. blow up into something crazy, we hold a responsibility. You know, there's, especially with social media and stuff, there's going to be people that you influence and you don't even know them, right?
That's real.
So why would I have something on mm-hmm. the show that I don't even give a fuck about? And I want people to give a fuck about my show.
That's real dire. And, you know, like you said about how situations, you know, we won't say who. Me and King, we've had, you know, a couple of people on our show where things got a little awkward. You well, know, and, you know, it was like, and King, you know, being the magnificent, you know, mediator that he is, you know, he went to the Al Haymon School of Negotiation. Shout out Money Team. You know, King, you know, always, you know, understood more than anything, rather than sensationalism, we have a responsibility in terms of how we communicate over the airwaves.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't run, just like you don't run, Dyer, we don't run a clown circus here. We run a legitimate, respectable, reputable operation that is premised on the love
yeah.
of the culture and about really articulating that love through respect, you know. And we got to stand and rule. You know, we aren't going to get crazy unless an artist gets super crazy on our show. But if we really feel like something is going off the track, we just hit the click button and end it right there. You know,
it's funny.
Go ahead, please.
No, I'm sorry. I was just saying, so I got a great story. I was doing Blog Talk Radio, Die For Radio. And
right.
I forget who else was on the show, but I know Keith Murray was one of them.
Okay.
So I'm trying to remember. It was like Keith Murray, like MJG from, you know, A-Bone MJG, somebody else, whatever. So it comes time for Keith Murray's interview. So
right.
I bring him on. Same Blog Talk thing, you know, same thing. I'm like, yo, Keith Murray, what up? Da 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 da. He's like, hello? I'm like, yo, he couldn't hear me, right? We can hear him, though, but he couldn't hear me. Like, perfectly clear, too. It wasn't, like, bad reception. This motherfucker start going, this motherfucker, hello? I'm going to kill this motherfucker. Like, da 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 da. Like, because it was muted or something, so his manager, like, texted him and told him to hook up. To hang up and this and that. And she called and got on the show and was like, I could hear her fine. Went back to him. Couldn't hear him, whatever he was doing with his phone. Motherfucking piece of... It was obviously, he came back like the next week. You know, we talked to him later. And something was wrong with his phone and it wasn't us. But at the time, he was thinking it was our equipment or whatever. It's Block Talk. You can either hear us or you can't. You know what I mean? And
right.
Yeah, that shit was funny as hell, bro. And I, you know, I was, this was some of kind of like my not first shows, but I was still kind of, you know, getting warmed up. So I didn't press mute on him or anything. I'm trying to, I'm thinking it's me too. Like, let me, and finally just had to press mute. This motherfucker's talking about killing me and shit.
Man.
I'm telling
yeah,
you.
You know, one thing,
but you know,
yeah.
We also had situations too where, sometimes we get caught in the middle of people bullshit, man. Like, and that's a thread line of pretty much mediating, because you don't want your platform to be responsible for anybody getting hurt or anybody getting shot or anybody getting stabbed. So
right.
Anytime when people try to, you know, put their issues on and they go real far to the left, we got to be the real mediators and be like, look, I had to edit that out, man. Like, look, I can't put that on YouTube, man. If you want to shoot that nigga grandma house up, man, you go right ahead. Don't do it. Don't just say it on my platform.
Right.
Just
no,
don't
crazy.
Say
I
it
had,
here,
I
man.
I gave one of the only shows I did with like one person was 2 hours with Lord Jamar on Die For Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Live. That's an interesting show right there.
Yeah, and one thing about it, man, is that people think that it's this is, there's one thing about it. When we look at certain people, you know, like Charlamagne, when we see Star, you know, they can get wild and crazy on air. But usually there's a method to the madness. And also, too, they have a corporate sponsorship behind them where it facilitates certain amounts. People got to understand.
Of course, got a bag behind.
You know, and I'm going to say this for everybody to understand this because I want everybody to understand this clearly. With those guys, there's a certain amount of fuckery that is going to be expected from them because that is their branding. One thing I will tell anybody out there, don't make their fuckery your foolishness. You know,
right?
When you're dealing with real situations, you're dealing with people that, you know, if worse comes to worse, there are agents, there are corporations. If it even really goes there, there are lawyers that can hash any differences out. But when you get into it in terms of, you know, really perpetuating a lot of foolishness between people to where you know that this situation is a hot button topic with either a subject or a problem between two people and some shit happens, you know, that person that says something on your show, if it is, God forbid, an actual incident of violence that occurs from it and that person articulated a threat on your show, what they say in the Miranda, anything you say can and will be used. And that guest can have your show used as a conviction, which is not necessarily good for your branding because you don't know how people are going to interpret that. You know, you weren't responsible for it, but this person says something on your show that could get you caught up in something. They might even ask you about your part in it. So it is very important that you understand the tempo, the flow, the climate, the conversation. Don't do clout chasing for sensation where there could be a catastrophe behind it. And I think that's what some people have to understand. You know, be in this to really, really have a conversation. Sometimes things may get serious. They might even get a little left. But don't make that your intention to stir up some shit just because ultimately you're the one covered in it and the toilet ain't going to get flushed behind it either.
Yeah, and I'll tell you too, one thing that you're touching on there is why back in the day, and especially when rap / gangster rap / political rap, doesn't matter, all around the board,
right?
They had artist development.
Exactly.
Look, you can say this on the records, you can say this, and this, but let's chill with this, especially with the media. And you had departments that would finalize speeches, like for the president, even for these artists.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you say it in records, potentially, even though people are getting locked up for the records now too, but potentially, you know, it's an artist expression. You know, like my real name is so and so, my rap name is Ice Cube, so I'm acting, you know, as Ice Cube saying this. But you know, there was whole departments that would tell artists, you know, this can be used against you if you say this. You know, like yo.
Yeah, freedom of speech isn't free sometimes, and it's not, you know, because people got to understand, when you get out there and you put certain things, you know, and one thing about this, Dyer, you know, you're just as much of an astute hip-hop historian as we know. We respect your knowledge, and you're giving game, and the reality is people got to understand that when you're dealing with artist development, when you're talking about millions of dollars at stake, you know, there is a thing to be said about how you are going to present yourself, and whether media, you know, in terms of when you're doing interviews, whether online, magazines, whatever, because you are a representation of that business that you are signed to. And if it's a situation where you become,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, we've seen artists that, you know, we've seen athletes, you know, when they get out of control, we're looking at the people like, you know, like, yo, like, what's up with your man? You know what I'm saying? I mean, whether it's somebody's manager who keep trying to jump in the spotlight more than the artist, or you see a, you know, boxer on a squad where everybody else is doing their thing, but he keep acting up, and we're like, he's a reflection of your business enterprise. You know, what's going on with him? You know, he making y'all look bad. You know, from your opinion, Dyer, what do you think that it started getting lost in terms of why you think labels started not necessarily putting an emphasis on artist development, where back in the day it was a priority?
Yeah, shit, wasn't just a priority. You could the whole fucking department. You know what I mean? But also too, look, for what you brought up, you know, here comes the thin line that we have to, because also a little controversy sells, right?
That's
like
true.
We don't want to just have bland content. You know, people don't watch soap operas because it's like everyday life. They watch soap operas because of the drama.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So you gotta find that thin line, because you either gotta research the artist that you're interviewing to the crazy facts that you're bringing up, shit that, you know, 100 people haven't already asked them, right? Or bring up something controversial because you have a different point of view than the last person that interviewed him about it, right?
Right.
Exactly.
So what's that thin line? Because again, you know, this goes back to earlier what we were saying, you know, why are you going to wait to get your shit to get, like, if you say, well, you know, I get the show like going like it's supposed to when we have like sponsors and shit. Why would you wait to get your show shit together? You know, when the sponsor sees you, you're already good to go or whatnot. You know what I mean? But again, what's that thin line? Because a little controversy does sell, am I right?
That's
absolutely
true.
And that's
absolutely,
always been a fascination because people – go ahead, King, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, because people don't want to hear about you building schools or saving cats from trees, man. They want to hear the drama.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's – again, that's the time will tell, fellas. You know, like drama's the most popular movie genre out there.
You know, when we look at it, guys, from a perspective, yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, when we look at Diary King, we look at it from a situation of how people have a vicarious, they try to live vicariously through a lot of these artists. At the end of the day, it's entertainment, whether it's reality shows or whether it's music or it's movies. One thing that, you know, I think some people don't understand is that their lives are not your life, and the worst thing that you can do is try to absorb yourself into somebody's existence of which you have no experience, especially
yeah.
when you don't understand this from a show business perspective of how sensationalism really works in terms of exaggeration. There are elements to it that are going to be, you know, pushed up because obviously it's what sells, because there's always going to be that added spice, you know, in the mix that makes it more potent. But as we have seen sometimes with some of these artists, they got two way out there in terms of trying to, you know, either push something that really didn't need to be pushed or really trying to exaggerate something that they didn't really live. I mean, look what happened with Vanilla Ice back in the day where he tried to, you know, prop himself up for being in the hood. You know, he even said he was a motocross champion at one point. And then when the G-check came on them and found out it was all, you know, counterfeit on the papers, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Who did you say? Who
you
did
know?
You say?
Vanilla Ice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? See, even that's, you know, like, because everybody know who wrote Ice Ice Baby. It was Chocolate.
Right.
You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, everybody knows him. I mean, everybody, you know, like, everybody knows this entity. So outside looking in, it was like surprise when people heard that. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, the dude wrote you his song. You know that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, but yeah.
And you know what? And you know what? To make to build on your platform, there's another thing too. And one of the things that I learned, also you gotta work on your personality. Like, you know, to be able to present yourself
yeah.
to where you don't want to be relying on the guests. You got to be able to sometimes wing shows to where you can still present a good show without depending on a guest.
You know who could do that really well? Wing some shit, still make it a good show and cussing people. My brother Mav.
Who's that?
My brother Mav 4, man. This motherfucker unorthodox as fuck. But it bring a whole different it bring a whole different element from the people he's interviewing. You know what I'm saying? And that's just him. Like that one dude. What's his name? I'm not saying they're like each other, but
Nordwar. What's the dude's name? It's some weird white dude that he interviewed everybody, but he's just like completely off his rocker, pretty much. But yeah, like Thor, when he just shows he's got his own style, it's rough around the edges and it's this and, you know, like, but he bring a whole different conversation than anybody else would have got out of the artist by being that way. And it works. You know what I'm saying? So, it, personality is, I think, too, as hosts, you just got to be you. You know what I mean? You got, like, again, appealing for whatever crowd and this and that. I mean, you're going to have to do something to the nature at some point, right? But you still just got to be like you, your personality, and how you love hip-hop. I do a podcast because I always wanted my own Rap City. I always wanted my own wake-up show. You know what I mean? Saturdays, when I grew up, Saturdays 10 to 2. DJ Tech, you know, and I mean, Swain Tech and DJ Revolution. You know what I mean? And motherfuckers freestyling. I wanted that. So when the technology hit right, to where, like, I'm like, shit, I'm here doing music anyways. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, it just worked out to where, you know, we do what we do. And I do got to say, shout out my dude, Todd Davis. He's been my partner in crime since Skyfall Radio. And we fucking slayed the game and still working. So, you know.
Yeah, man.
And one of the main challenges that we had as a show was it was so much shit going on through the week that at first when we started in the beginning, we had to find ways to cram all that dialogue into 2 hours. Because, you know, Blowtorch, they charge a bitch for the 3 hours. So we was like, hell no. We going to go in and try to do what we do for the two.
Right.
So much was going on. Go ahead.
When I was doing Blog Talk and Die For Radio Heavy, right? This was before Four got an accident and after. I was doing 2 shows a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it was 2-hour show. So I was basically on the air four hours a week. And then booking 3 to 4 guests for each show. I even had a ladies' night one night where I let everybody talk it kind of but once. It actually worked out. All these replays are still up too. I need to go download them before something happens, you know what I mean? But so it was a ladies' night and I had MC Light, Rod Digger, Charlie Baltimore, Oaktown 357, like Lady Luck and a couple others. Like it was years ago.
Good Lord.
But, yeah, like ladies' night. Let's like boom, 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 boom. Let's do this. So I'm also a producer, engineer, and an artist myself, right? So my whole week was literally consumed by trying to do these 2 shows a week. I was actually losing money on music because I wasn't able to do music.
Right.
And so I went to LA Talk Radio for like 2 months. And even that was like, damn, you know, and this was a dope-ass studio. We're literally on LA Talk Radio, you know what I mean? And it was me and Big Hutch. For like the last month we did it, Big Hutch was my co-host. And we're doing the Black Godfather at the time. And it was dope. But I finally just threw my hands up and was like, yo, I got to do music again. Like, this sucks. Like, I'm supposed to be able to do both of this shit, but it was just so time-consuming, so I feel you all on it. Like, I just had to stop for a while, and it was a couple years I didn't do it, and then came back right around when COVID hit. Actually, before COVID hit, I was doing phone conversations, but recording them in the studio, so they sound nice, and then putting them on the podcast, like Apple, you know, podcast and all that shit. And then right around the time the Versus hit, I hit up Todd and I was like, yo, let's get these motherfuckers on Instagram Live. He was like, yep. We just fall into suit. Did our thing.
Well, I mean, that's one thing about it is it adapt, you know, improvise, overcome. You know, and like anything, you know, even with, you know, when you look at two of the best in sports talk business, you know, Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, VSPN's Part of the Interruption, of course.
Yeah.
You know, with a lot of the guests on ESPN's Around the Horn, even on First Take, you know, with Stephen A. Smith, you know, you notice a lot of times they'll have revolving guests here and there because while they enjoy what they do, you have to have moderation in terms of, number one, mentally knowing that you're up for it when you're ready to do it, because this is what some people don't understand. It's okay to take a break from it sometimes.
you know, when you got a lot going on, because you don't want to burn yourself out doing it. You may have other stuff going on. You know,
and homie,
I dropped
like 8 albums when I stopped doing like radio in general. I dropped like 8 albums in like a year.
Oh, wow. Dar was like, yeah, man, look, I hit that creative streak. I had to do it.
I was ready to do music again. You know, I was ready to do music. Like, I was missing it. I was missing, you know, drunk studio sessions where you're, you know, falling asleep at 4:30 because you're still working on that fucking hi-hat. You know what I mean? Like, I miss that.
What is it like?
You know what, too, man? It's a...
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying too, it's like, it's all so different layers, like, you know, when you come to find your personality, like what we had to do with the YouTube channel, what I had to do, I was like, okay, we can't fit 2 hours of content into these shows, like, you know, 6 hours or 8 hours worth of content into 2 hour shows. And plus, news travels so quick versus how it was. Like, everything that was hot news a month ago ain't even news no more. Like, nobody's even talking about the baby no more in that incident.
You know, it's funny you say that. So, like, I'll tell you this. This is January 1st, I started a campaign called 365 where I was dropping a new song every day for the whole year. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like 60-something days in. I think like 61 or something like that. And I talked to a really reputable record exec. You fuck with everybody. You know, I give a little hint. Hashtag, he says, we working. But either way, he was like, Dire, like, I love your shit. But, like, you know, I get what you're doing. I salute you. Like, you just dropped 60 songs in a fucking row, homie. Like, what the fuck? He's like, but any one of these could be a hit. Like, day 14 could be a hit. But nobody knows because they're on day 32 already. Right? You know, that, like, there comes a point where you got to let shit breathe. And you got to, you know, really focus on, like, you know, what's going to matter and demographics. And it really is like that. You know what I mean? And I, you know, even though I said I wasn't, I stopped doing the 365 because I felt like, what if I'm, you know, cutting my own self off? I got a hit that I dropped on day 9, but nobody knows because they're listening to, you know, day 32 for a couple hours and then whatever. Maybe they don't come back for like day 42. You know what I'm saying? And shit like that. So I stopped what I was doing. But you know what was dope is just getting in the, like when I stopped doing the podcast before, getting in the rhythm of doing music, getting in the rhythm of writing, getting the rhythm of mixing, getting the rhythm. It's, you know, it's all a rhythm.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys feel the same way booking shows. Like some weeks it's like a rhythm. The show goes great, this and that. And then the next week it's like, fuck, I don't know if he's going to make it, but I said he's going to make it. Then they do. And like the phone doesn't work or, you know, and it's shaky as shit. But you get what you get. You know what I mean? And keep moving on.
But one thing you said, Dyer, really is important because it's all about being able to have a understanding. Because when you look at certain artists, there's a certain amount of exposure that you want to have. Robert Greene spoke about this in the 48 Laws of Power in terms of, you know when to disappear. Because you don't want to oversaturate the market in terms of your presence because you become a habit.
Right.
People get tired of it. When you step away once you've made your impact, you don't want to stay away too long because you don't want them to forget about you, especially in this microwave nature of media and music. But, you know, it's like how Rihanna did it. Rihanna has not released an album in 2016. And then last year, she teased that song with like 6 words on it, and then bam. But everybody is still fiending for RiRi to drop another album. And everybody's wondering, is she going to drop another album? You know, but RiRi left with her last record on top. And it's like everybody is still waiting for her. But once you have established yourself in terms of reaching a certain apex of attention, adoration, and success, you can step away from it. And, you know, you're still going to have your fans waiting. You know, even with Lauryn Hill, with all her crazy antics, you know,
people
yeah,
I'm about
still
to go see them live. I'm about to go see them live next month, homie.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at Lauryn doing that appearance on King's Disease 2, dropping her verse, Lauryn may be a bit weird at times. I'll tell you one thing, y'all. You know, you heard her on that album, King and Daya. She blazed her verse.
Yeah.
And let us know.
But look, what artist isn't, I mean, I think that there's a big misconception, and people that are non-artisty, if you will, right? Like, what artist
right.
isn't weird? The reason they can do what they do is because they're fucking weird. I'm fucking weird.
Yep.
I'm like, you're weird if you can write lyrics like that to beats like that or make beats. You know, like, we're weirdos. Like, that's what the fuck we are. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason we're artists.
Right.
We think differently than the average person. So,
right.
you know, once you get to that point, though, you know, you're going to be judged literally only for the bad shit you do. And I agree with what you're saying. Like, Riri, you know, you go out on top. I mean, look at what Dre does. You know, Dre's still one of the most relevant, like, rappers and producers out there, and he rarely drops anything.
Look, we talked to a friend of ours who was who's been to Dre's house. He told me that he's like, yes, Dre has Detox. I'm like, tell Dre we need that album, even if we gotta run up in there and get it.
No.
You know,
he has Detox. You know, Detox changed with the different artists that he gets. He's got
right.
a Detox times 100. You know what I mean? I worked for Record One. You know, that's where Dre did all his shit at that time. So the Bishop Lamont, the Gangs shit, and, you know, a bunch of contracts with Interscope, Chris Cornell and Timbaland. Like, I got to engineer all this shit. And trust me, he's been had it. He's been had
right.
it.
Right.
But I get it too.
It's just good,
I get it too though. I'm not one of them Dre haters like, oh, you need to just No, Detox progresses every year. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's different. I mean, it's just that's music. Look, I just recently bought a desktop hard drive. Okay, so a 10 terabyte desktop hard drive. To get all my
right.
all these hard drives and shit I have together for all my radio shows, my music, my everything, right? So I'm going through, you know, all sorts of different, you know, things and songs and this and that. And so I have 139 unreleased finished songs.
Good
and
boy.
That has nothing to do with what I did for 365, which I stopped on date 63.
Mm-hmm.
Of just unreleased done songs. But everything I'm dropping. So, you know, for example, I'm dropping an EP called My Beautiful Burden, which we talk about all this type of stuff, the game, how sometimes it is a burden, but I love it. You know, it's beautiful, but it's a burden and shit like that. On my birthday, October 24th. So regardless of the 138 songs, all the songs are pretty new because of how I feel about this album. So think about your favorite artist that's been doing that for fucking 30 years. Everything's in
that groundwork, man. That's that groundwork right there, man. And
by the way, I did
and build
you all,
it all.
I don't know if it's the right. I don't know if it's the right email address, but I shot you guys a song off of the Beautiful Burden.
Okay.
Which one you send it to?
This one. It was probably Off the Cuff Radio, I'm assuming.
Yeah, send it to my personal email. I'm going to send it to you after the show. Then you can just send it in.
Yeah,
because that email be acting up sometimes.
Yeah, all good. All good.
I got to bring up
before, you know, y'all get on there, so I'm going to take your time too, but... Working hard on this JD album, man, and I'm telling you, like, I just got off the... I was on an Instagram Live with JD before I called up right now, and we excited about this album. This you know, we're putting out a set of EPs called JD's Revenge, and...
Oh, after the movie, the Glenn Turman, yeah.
And
yeah,
this first one is bananas, and this second one's about to be... We're already working on the second one. Finishing up all the last post-production shit for the first one. So, you know, shout out my dude, JD, man. Like, so happy for this brother.
Good
man.
Brother, man.
Yeah,
and
man.
Good brother, man.
Solid as they come.
If you look on, yeah, another thing too. If you guys notice, when you get that creative feel, it starts going into different directions. Like, if you look at some of the videos that I've done creative mini videos for different songs, and I did one recently for the Lynch Mob, You and Your Heroes. I'm surprised you two green like that shit.
Well, so we gotta.
I don't know how that. I was scared that was even going to make it through the crack.
So JD wrote that song, right? So look, we got an album coming out that's going to be on, because you know Gorillaz in the Mist isn't on Spotify or iTunes or anything. But we got an album coming out called JD Essentials, and that's one of the ones that's going to be on it. There was four or five of them that he actually wrote himself, like nobody else, boom boom. So there's going to be a CD coming out like that. Then we got JD's Revenge, and then the next one, and then of course watch out for that JD and Dire Lancey album, you know what I mean? So
oh yeah, man, you gotta tell us this though, you gotta tell us this too about this experience here, because we talked about this like a while back, man. You was engineering DMX's last album, right?
Well, when he came to L.A., well, you know, I got involved in the project with my homie Cavi. You know what I'm saying? And Cavi, if you don't know, now you know. Cavi is produced from everyone, from DMX. Just you name a rapper, he's producing. He got a big complex in downtown, middle of Hollywood called Vortex Hollywood. I had my studio there for a little bit. But, you know. Yeah, there was a bunch of tracks at the Vortex that, you know, obviously didn't make the album. And, once he passed, it turned into a different thing, you know. And I get it. You know, it becomes whatever's on the contract at that time. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. But I was hoping for a good, 2021, 22, being on DMX's album, but and of course, DMX is a great brother. Like, how tragic. Like, I would much rather have him still here than have him on any one of my beats. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's just unfortunate how it worked out. That was a really, really good brother right there. And we still haven't seen the complete effects of DMX not being in hip hop anymore. For real.
Man, when you think about it in terms of everything, he went through his ups and downs, but he was so relatable, and that's what made him so revered, because he was real. He was the anti-Hollywood. He was the homie you would see around the street, he really resonated from that perspective of...
But he was also so passionate. Like, even if you didn't know him, you felt his passion with whatever he did. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's the way he was. That's really the way he was. In fact, I got an interview coming up for What's More Podcast for kind of a DMX tribute, and there's going to be some people on there, like Dame Grease and these people that are going to talk about it. And it's everybody that you talk to about it, you just, they didn't know DMX. They, like, felt him. You know what I mean? He was really like that. Now, not obviously, like, belly and shit like that, but everything he did, he was passionate about. And I think even people that didn't know him, and I didn't know him that well, you know what I'm saying? Like, you felt it, though. Like, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
And another one I got to bring up, too, rest in peace. You know, I was doing a EP with Badass when he passed. And I still, I still haven't finished those songs, but Badass and I got like three or four tracks that I have right now. And, I'll eventually get to them, but that was a good dude right there too. You know what I mean? And,
yes, he
and
was.
You talk about talented. Man, my dude Badass could rap, bro. Wow.
Yeah, that was one of our best shows, man, because the crazy part about Badass is that when you talking to him about 80% of it don't even have to do with music. It's life stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we spent like half the interview when we first interviewed him. We were talking about chemicals and food and water.
Yeah.
really deep dude.
I'll never forget him.
Really?
I'll never forget. So we were sitting there with Cavi, as a matter of fact, at Vortex Hollywood, and Badass came through. We were going to record a track, and it was me, Cavi, Dana Dane, the homie Payback, who played bass on, like, everything for Cube. He played the bass for the New York, all that shit. And we all sitting there chilling, talking about music. And I think 6 in the morning, Ice T came on. And everybody in the room starts spitting it just out of nowhere, like the whole song. I got footage of that shit sitting in the big studio. Dana Dane, Badass, me, Payback, and Cavi. And it was just a crazy, crazy moment in time, man. Like, you know, I love little things. Like, I don't take a lot of footage where I go. Like, at concerts I do, you know, podcast-wise and this and that. But every once in a while, I get some dope studio footage. It's just like, yo, that shit crazy. Yep, I like that. And that was one of them times. But, yeah, so I do got an EP with Badass that eventually, you know, I'll put out. But it's good securing the vaults right now.
Yeah. What's it like just having that synergy with a song like that coming on and all of y'all just locked in? Because not only from a classic perspective, but the creative minds that are hearing it at that time, Dahlia.
Well, you know what? Most of the time I'm in the studio with people, I'm the one recording them. I'm the one engineering, right? So even if it's for a song of mine, a song for their album, this and that, once the other person gets in the vibe and they're writing and you know we're going to record, I get straight into engineer mode. I start setting up the tracks. I start setting up this. So when they say, I'm ready, or let me record this real quick, or I got it. Let me, you know, I got those 16. Doesn't matter. I'm like, yep, go ahead and go in the booth. I'm ready. Press record. So it is a synergy, you know what I mean, that I kind of feed off, you know, other people just to get like, yo. And I'm an asshole when it comes to tracking lyrics. I don't give a fuck. I'm a stickler with it. Like, it's got to sound right when you record. I don't record with plug-ins, nothing. I record people raw through the microphone. We have great equipment, so raw through the microphone. We put the plug-ins and all that shit afterwards. I want to make sure that it sounds like you're talking in this track. Because when I mix it, if it already sounds mixed, I don't have to do much. It's all dynamic after that. And that's how, why people sound so good in really good studios is the equipment they roll through is amazing. And the mixing just comes down to if you know your job. But, so yeah, look, and you know what? I've worked with all my favorite artists, I'm glad to say. And every time, you know, definitely respect, you know, especially Yuck Mouth. You know, I love working with Yuck. It's, you know, it's been fun even since we started and shit like that. But once you get in that mode, we're doing a song, which is second nature. You know what I mean? You're focused on to get it tracked and boom, boom, boom. Okay, say this different. Oh, I need to say this. Boom, 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 boom. Next song. Let's go.
And I mean this.
And as an engineer, afterwards, you'd be like, yo, that shit's dope. You know, after everybody went home, you get to listen to it, right? Yeah, that's fire.
And once you start seeing the end result, because that's what we work for is the end result. The end result, that's the best feel-good feeling in the world.
Oh, yeah. And especially with you being an artist, a producer, a mixer, you know, master of dog, you know all aspects of the game in terms of what it means, in terms of how everything is supposed to come down. So you
I'm blessed because I can make money off of music. I don't have to rap or produce anything. Like I can just make money by recording other people and giving it to them to put out.
Oh yeah. And that's
levels to it, man.
And that's the gift of it. And it's one thing about it, once you understand that gift in terms of how you are able to do it, you know, that's something that you always be able to utilize. When you think about it in terms of your journey in hip-hop, Dire, from all aspects of it, what do you think you've enjoyed the most from it in terms of, you know, what is it giving you the most in terms of what you are you most grateful for with it?
you know, I gotta say, I'm just grateful for the relationships that I've had with people that as a kid I really looked up to, and they actually turned out to be who they said they were on a record. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what made me want to do this to begin with, right? With the people I grew up listening to. So when I got a chance to work with all those people, and they were actually, you know, who I thought they were, it was refreshing. Because it's like, okay, you know, in an extreme sense, you know, they raised me. You know, I grew up on the street. And I always wanted to rap. And everybody that I listened to influenced me more to rap and rap. You know, and I will say, too, people, you know, people like Big Hutch, Binky Mac and Squeak Roo, you know, Laylaw and them. I mean, they all really kind of like, you know, saw my potential, I guess you could say, and let me do whatever the fuck I want. You know what I mean? And so I'm great. I'm really grateful for the hip hop relationship that I have with people and hip hop in general, you know. It's a blessing, and it inspires the shit out of me.
That's real. That is real, man.
That's real.
And you know,
that's
one thing about
black,
it,
I was gonna ask him this too, man. And do you feel this is happening as well? Because I could tell this is kind of happening to me. Do you feel that a lot of these analytics are fudging with your numbers and your draw, because you drawing some heavyweights on your show?
You know, well, I will say, so no one's really seen any of these new What's More podcasts, right, that we're filming with the production team. I can't say much right now, but it's about to come out in a whole different anything than anybody's ever seen. But I will say, I got hated on a lot, even on Blog Talk. I had so many, like, dope artists on my show. And as I told you guys earlier, like, I was working my ass off to have two-hour shows. Of course, we go into overtime, and I'd have, like, four people every show. You know, people thought, well, you know, we were doing the radio before. You know, you were on my show before you had a radio show. They kind of thought, like, I had to give them the artist that I was getting, but I was running a whole different fucking, like, thing than them. You know what I mean? And it's like, yo, this is just situation I'm in. So there was hate from there. Then when I went to LA Talk Radio, it was even more hated. And then, you know, Instagram killed them. And what was dope about Instagram is I found a whole new fan base off of the people I had on the show, because everybody's on Instagram, right? And so for the first time last year, I started to see true organic followings and numbers. And when you get that, you can literally tell nobody's fucking with you.
Yeah.
But
and that's important, man. When you look at
analytics are transformed by, what do they call it? Like when you you like type something in Google and then it shows up on Instagram and Facebook. The
algorithm,
yeah. No matter what, you can't turn that shit off.
And you know, it's wild, man, because when you look at the how the internet works in terms of, because like you said, Dyer, you know, you found your base with a real organic following, you know, just like we have. You know, we've really, you know, built it up over the years, you know, in terms of just a cohesive team effort. You know, you being instrumental in our success as well, because you've given us so much help, among others. You know, and now it's a situation where we've really been able to broaden our reach, you know, which has enabled us to get a lot more guests. You know, but one thing about
you guys are pulling numbers, y'all. I mean, again, I haven't put any of my new episodes out, and we are kind of coming out on our own platform that's going to be introduced soon. But, like, you know, y'all, man, my YouTube is horrible for What's the Word podcast. Now, granted, I don't promote and I don't, you know, share the links, and, you know, I'm, you know, bad on getting interviews up there, at least up to this point. But, you know, y'all get numbers. You know, my Instagram lives were big-ass numbers because they were live with me. Everybody that's a fan of them, you know, sees that they're online and do it. You know, boom, boom, boom. And that literally was, like, I can't pay for that good of promotion. Like, you literally for no. free got to hop on the biggest social platform out there, and everybody that's a fan of the person you want sees they're on and hops on there, but it's your profile.
Yeah.
And it was free.
That's the best price.
Wait, so yesterday's price is today's price, as Fat Joe would say?
Yeah, yeah. And when people like Big Daddy Kane and Kelly Price and, you know what I'm saying, Beanie Siegel and, yeah, In Vogue and all these people we had on there, people were tuning the fuck in and were like, yo, who the fuck is Dyer Lansky? Who the fuck is this? I've never heard of this dude. Like, what the fuck?
But you don't, he doesn't come out of
he
shadows.
Gotta be that, I know they, some cats was probably thinking, yo, he got to be the plug.
Yeah, and then they do one thing that is another free fucking dope-ass shit that we have. It's called Google. I'm the one and only Dyer Lansky. So when you Google that shit, it tells you everything about me. And they're like, oh, that's who the fuck Dyer Lansky is. And I didn't have to pay no publicist for that to be on Google.
They're like, oh, we know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I heard of him. But...
And see,
social media at its best. It's a double-edged sword. You know, now I can't make $3 off a record. I got to make 0.07 cents off the stream.
What do people have to understand
in
terms of how... Yeah, yeah, I was just going to ask...
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to... What do people have to understand about marketing themselves online, Dyer, in terms of really, you know, making sure that... Because once your name gets out there, for better or for worse, that's what it is. And, you know, King and myself have seen this over the years in terms of how a lot of these artists hire these PR people to handle stuff for them, but it just seems like, you know, they fumble the ball that has more oil on it, you know, than a blown oil rig, and they just keep slipping with it. You know, what is it about presentation on your media presence and also – having people who really understand how you want and should be presented?
Well, first off, I would say with radio, whether it's on camera or off camera, like you know, radio is, you know, you got to be able to hold a fucking conversation. Like, it doesn't matter where the fuck you're from. You got to be able to talk to anybody from any dynamic and hold some kind of conversation, right? Because you have to be relatable to somebody. Yeah, my girl just said hashtag relatable. Like, you have to relate to somebody for somebody to be like, oh, this dude knows what he's talking about. That has to happen with at least one person. And if you are just a fucking idiot, I'll just say it like that, but just in general, and no one relates to you, no one's going to talk about you. So I think, you know, the gift of gab is still golden. Does that make sense? Like, if you got the gift of gab with anything, you could be a salesman, you could do this, you could do that. If you just know how to look at people and talk to them or hear what people need and talk to them, you're good in business.
Yeah, that's important. Because game to me is where you could use – what you got to say to convert that person. Like, what we doing is actual game. Like, it takes a lot of game to bring up a lot of, like, you know, especially connecting with different artists and connecting with people that we normally don't meet because, you know, we wasn't really a part of that circle. Like, for us to come from the outside, connecting with managers, connecting with publicists,
and making the situation happen. How do you not be a fan? Like, you know, how do you bypass, like, dude, I'm fucking interviewing. I'm sitting here with Rakim right now in person, like, interviewing him. How do you not just be a fan and be like, yo, I got to – because obviously I'm going to be straight with that situation. Like, I got to talk to Rakim. But now I got to do something that other people are going to want. And this is my first time I met him, right? So it's it boils down to what we're talking about at the beginning. This isn't an easy job. You know what I mean?
No.
You literally, you know, I wasn't a big comic book guy. I had basketball players and rappers. You know what I mean? And, you know, so these were my superheroes. So I'm sitting here with my superhero and trying not to geek out and make a conversation enough to record it well enough so other people want to hear it. So again, you know, I think what we do is the artistry as well. And we're weirdos. Like I said earlier, we're weirdos. Like, how do you not just be a fan and be like, okay, let me talk to you to ask you questions that other people want to hear?
Right.
That's just crazy, right?
Right.
When you look at it, the challenge is
I was saying one of the biggest challenges too is one of the biggest challenges is making your show indifferent from everybody else. Right? We see what the Blads do, we see what Adam 22s, we see what you guys do. Not saying it in a competitive way, but we see what Murder Master Music Show, we see Rap Radar, we see a lot of these platforms out there. The main challenge is to be different and to come with a different style.
Yeah.
That's not identical to what they're doing.
Yeah, because you want them to hear something different in the interview you did. And I think that's why, too, with What's the Word podcast, I love being kind of like an engineer and people that do music is because I have a motherfucker on there and ask them what microphone and equipment they were using when they dropped their single. You know what I mean? And that goes into some whole other thing that's like, yo, it's crazy, too. So the homie came with some weed, right? And we're trying to literally cut the ADAT. And you know what I mean? And it's just different. So obviously I'm going to ask about the new albums and, you know, do a little history and shit like that. Look, my second episode, so my first episode that's dropping later this month is with JD. I'm the first and only one to do an interview with JD. The second one is with all the Stets of Sonic. It was a Zoom call because they're all over there, but they're dropping a new album. So I'm the first one to do an interview with all of Stets of Sonic at one time. You know what I'm saying? And our first two episodes are crazy, right? Shit, I even lost track of what I was going to say because I was hyping this show so much.
Well, what was it like in terms of having all – what was it like having them on the show in terms of, like, especially when you said Steph Sonic is having a new album out? I mean, shout out to Daddy O and all of them, man. I mean, this is like – that's huge.
So what's dope is I actually got to hang out with Daddy O when he came to L.A., right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went – met up with Daddy-O. I brought my MPC, and we're fucking around. So, and I had him on, you know, on What's the Word podcast. And so, you know, obviously just kept in contact. So eventually I sent him a folder of beats. And he hit me like 3:30 in the morning, which was like 5:30, wherever the fuck he was. He's in like Texas or something. And he was like, yo, this shit right here, boom, boom, boom. I even took a screenshot because they posted something for Steps of Sonic, and he posted underneath what I said. I said, that shit's fire. And he was like, you should know you're the new Steps of Sonic producer. Right? So I took a screenshot of that. And I was like, cool, you know, let's keep working. And so we were sending tracks back and forth. And then I had speech from Arrested Development on my show. And Daddy-O got brought up somehow, right? And so it was like, yo, I was like, yeah, that's, you know, that's dope. You know, I was just with Daddy-O and, you know, I got some beats on the new Steps of Sonic record and this and that. He was like, yo, that's cool. You know, so me, Chuck D, and Daddy will have an album. I think it's called Night Train or something like that, right? But it's speech from Arrested Development, Chuck D, and Daddy. I was like, yo, that's dope. So when I got off the show, I checked Daddy and I'm like, you know, shit. I just got off a speech on my show. He's like, dope. He's like, he told me about the album. I can't wait to hear it. He was like, dope. You're on it. I was like, oh, okay. Let's keep on going. So since the day I met Daddy-O, he's been hooking me up like a motherfucker. And now I got shit with Chuck D and Arrested Development and, you know, obviously Stets and, you know, all sorts of their motherfucking network. So shout out to Daddy-O. That's a good brother, too. And you talk about an OG, man. That I know New York motherfuckers don't be like, you know, they don't like to be called OG. But, I mean, do you guys understand how much that Daddy-O has produced? The dude produced it for the B-52s, like Love Shack and all that. Like,
say what? Wait a minute. Kate Pearson, Fred Snyder, B-52s, Love Shack. Man, that's crazy, man.
That's wild.
So, you know, 2022, I got production on, you know, hopefully some DMX shit, Stetsasonic, you know, Night Train with them brothers, Yuck Mouth and SIBO, Yuck Mouth and J Hood, JD, my own albums, Chop Black from the Who Riders, my homie Paz, Badass. I got a Boot Camp EP I've never released. And just whatever 137
work,
songs I have to release. So
it's all work, man.
Yeah, and it's great to see you still energized, Dyer, because we hear the passion, we hear the excitement, we hear the joy. We just hear the elation in your expressions, you know, your articulation, right? You know, it's, you know, you're still having fun with it and you're still, you know, breaking through barriers in terms of just, you know, you're still finding new ways to innovate and create. And that's a blessing, man, to be able to do that at such a high level like you've still been doing.
You know, it's ironic with what you say that is. Working with Jay, like this first couple, I mean, these projects I'm doing right now, like the Jay Hood and Yuck, and especially this album with JD, this is the most excited I've been about music in years. I'm talking years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at my discography, I drop at least 4 albums a year. At least. And right now is the most fun I've had in a long fuck. And Squeak and Trippin'. Squeak, I got an album with Squeak Groove that we dropping. This album with Squeak Groove got Mitchie Slick, Glasses Malone, MCA, CMG from Conscious Daughters, Buckshot, Yuck Mouth, obviously JD. I know I'm forgetting some motherfuckers, but like packed with just some West Coast shit that's crazy. And it's literally the most fun I've had with music in a long-ass time. And I'm having a blast.
Man, you said Glasses Malone, MCA, and Mitchie Slick. You know, I got to shout out, of course, Linkin Park, Ron Kind, Southeast, Dago, you know, with the Dago Push, man, Four Corners. I mean, shout out to Glasses and Watts. And, of course, shout out to 8 Hype out in Tragnew, man. I mean, yo, that's...
Man. Nah, look, this Squeak Groove album is crazy. I don't know if I said, but Buckshot from fucking Black Moon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's this album's about to be insane. It already is insane. But yeah, so you know, from here on out to 2022, you know, What's the Word podcast obviously do its thing. Watch out for everything we're doing at the Coin Academy. You know what I mean? We already world famous. You know what I mean? And shit, all these albums, bro, like music coming. And I mean, y'all can kind of feel the shift in kind of this hip hop. You know, a lot of people we listen to have been dropping records and they're being accepted a lot more than they used to be a couple years ago. So I think it's starting to shift a little bit.
Definitely. Especially the veterans. When the veterans come out and they're not really compromising their sound, they're sticking to their sound. And they're still making money off doing what they do. That's a beautiful thing, and that's what I liked about with these verses. Now, when you have the new generation of fans embracing the people that we grew up listening to.
Yeah,
and I just talked about that. I did a podcast last night with Diamond D, and that's exactly what we said. You know, we brought up the Karis One and Big Daddy Kane, and even the Fat Joe and Ja Rule. You know, you have a lot of new generation people that maybe never heard one of those songs, right? And now they're YouTubing and Googling that. And then, again, what we talk about, when you click on something else comes up. So it's like you also made like this. And people start, you know, somewhat digging into these digital crates.
Yeah. I mean, to have Diamond on the show, shout out to one of the dopest crate diggers in the history, you know, the Bronx born, you know, legend, man. I mean.
And there was when I said digging in the crates, that was no pun intended. I just realized I said that, but you know what I mean. But for real, like, you know, it's amazing. I mean, just that people care. Look, I have no right to tell you what type of hip hop to do or any music to do for that matter, right? I guess if you're gonna do hip hop, I want you to give a fuck about it, like I give a fuck about it. Maybe that's asking too much from people,
exactly.
Right? But when you have people that, you know, are being artists like this, and now, oh, look, that song's actually kind of dope, and they start researching some of these older artists and start expanding their mind. That's what we were trying to do to begin with anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's important.
Exactly.
I mean, just to have love for the culture.
Giving them that history lesson. Now, who do you got for the verses coming up? You got KRS and Big Daddy Kane.
It's going to be interesting because, obviously, Karis One has a lot bigger catalog than Big Daddy Kane. You know what I'm saying? So I guess the outside looking in, maybe Chris, but I mean, Big Daddy Kane got hit, and now that it's not just, like, people staring on Instagram Live, like they're doing a concert. I don't know if y'all seen Big Daddy Kane live, but it's like nothing you've ever seen. He's dancing and he's fucking performing. So, like, as a parent, Big Daddy Kane going to get Chris, right? I mean, have y'all seen Big Daddy Kane live?
I haven't
personally, but I did. I met him like twice because he stays out here in the Carolinas. Wait a minute. Yeah. He did. I did see him live. He performed at one of the clubs 3 years ago. He was a surprise guest. Man, it was incredible.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It's a good day for hip-hop. But, I mean, KRS One has a lot bigger catalog than Big Daddy Kane when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, KRS One didn't really stop dropping music until, like, early 2000s, I think. And then even after that, he came out with some shit. But Big Daddy Kane took a whole break. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but, you know, one thing about it at the end, you know, where the verses was kind of a, you know, comparison of catalogs from, you know, artists, what it's really evolved to, like you said, Dio, it's really become now a concert event. You know, it just kind of evolved into that on its own, because when you see a lot of these artists come out there, like with the Lox and Dipset, you know, which was really just a full concert, you know what I mean, at least the way Jada treated it. But you get to see these artists.
That was not a concert. That was a bloodbath. That was a mollywhopping. That was a, you know what I mean? Like, if that had been October, it would have been like Magic Mountain, you know, nightmare houses and shit.
Oh, Lord.
like, that shit was crazy. And I low-key thought, I was like, outside looking in, everything Dipset dropped was like an anthem, right? So I'm thinking the
right,
people watching
right,
it that don't know any better, they're going to be like, yo, you know, Dipset got this. But I know the Lox are better rappers, better lyricists than these dudes. So for me, it was like, you know, the Lox even shocked me, bro. But we got to understand, too, you know, Dipset never really toured together. They all toured on their own shit.
Yeah. And we can say that.
And plus, they spent the past decade beefing with one another.
Yeah.
Jada Kiss came out in a fucking shirt, Tiger shorts, and Timberland, and a fitted. Like, let's go.
Yeah. And we can talk about this on the show because this has been documented throughout the years, y'all. I mean, we look at Dipset from back in the day, like King said. You know, when you take it back about 16 years to 2005, you know, 2006, where they were almost there, like, you know, they had hits, but there was a lot of internal beef, you know, there were, which kind of blew up into everybody knowing, and we all know that story. And it just, it's like they were right, it's like Leon Lett in the Super Bowl back in 93 running towards the end zone, and Don Beebe knocks the ball out of his hand to get the touchback before the touchdown.
Oh, they don't know nothing about that.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, they were there at the goal line, and then all of a sudden the movement just stopped. And when you look at the Lox, even with all the shit they went through with Puffy, you know, in terms of what was going on with their publishing and all that, they still stayed together as a unit. There was never any problems between them. They're brothers. And when the situation cleared up for them, when the business got straight and they really were able to do music again together, they just did it. You know, they never had a pause in terms of their brotherhood. And that showed when they got out there in that versus. And Jada just decided that dude was just going to motherfucking launch the cannons. And we saw Jada, like you said, Doc, he was in war ready. He's like, let's do it. And he did it. And, but it's great to see people get that education in terms of that hip hop, in terms of really understanding what Dipset, what DMX, rest in peace, Snoop Dogg, Timbaland, the Wu-Tang, Premier, RZA, Ray Goat, all of them, what they have contributed. Because this is something that is for the archives, 50 years down the line, people are going to watch this and be like, this is what hip-hop is.
I agree. And one thing I can say, too, is I think people slipped on how many hits Ja Rule had as well.
Yeah.
And what a good entertainer Ja Rule is. You know, what a good performer he is. I mean, the dude had hits. Like, we love hip-hop, so we get caught up in the G-Unit shit and this and that. And trust me, there were some dope-ass fucking diss songs. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I love that. But we forget, it's after all these years, and of course 50 still act a fool. But Ja Rule had hit, and he out there like he is still a new artist.
That's one thing I give credit for. Yeah. He came out there, and he was just, you could see the excitement with him. It's not like he was just going through the motions like, Mr. Atkins got out there, and it was like, he just did it. I give that guy so much respect because even through all the years, he's been maligned, he's been clowned, he's been dissed, he's been put down. And that dude came out there and gave a hell of a show. And he showed that, I'm still here. And even when I went through what I went through, it didn't destroy me. And I got my catalog to back it up that I wasn't. That I wasn't a clown, that I wasn't a bum. Like, I had hit songs. And not only
not
at my age today, I can still perform them.
He never put out songs like Candy Shop or Amusement Park. He ain't put out none of that corny.
50 sales, though.
Yeah.
50 sales.
Yeah.
But he was able to control the narrative.
Yep. But, Irv a real respected dude on the streets and off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
There's still certain cats that, regardless, they get a lot of respect. Fat Joe, too, Terror Squad, them some real dudes. I had the pleasure of hanging out with Fat Joe's brother in Miami a couple of times. Just some real good people, man. I never met Fat Joe, but I met his brother. And he's just a good dude, man. So, like I said, when it comes down to these battles and his verses, especially now it's a concert, it's great for hip hop. It's gonna spark tours. It's definitely going to spark tours and this and that. Look, we going, I don't know if y'all heard of an artist named Leon Bridges. I'm going to see him tomorrow here in L.A. He doesn't do hip-hop. Mm-hmm. He do, like, all genres of R&B and, like, even shit sounds like Motown. He, like, number one artist in the country right now, by the way. Leon Bridges.
Oh, wow.
Just make great music. Seeing him tomorrow. We've seen the Fugees in November when they come here. I love seeing all these tours in. I was just a couple weeks ago with my wife out there with, Too Short and Ice Cube and Cypress Hill and, Second to None and the shows are coming back.
Yeah, and I think that's the beautiful thing about it, just to see everybody, really be able to get out there again and just see it, because this, there's nothing like interactions between the artists and the people, COVID fucked up a lot of shit, but I tell you one thing, though, to see people get out there and fellowship and have fun and party, that's the element that's really going to kind of help us
get through all of this, because people need to be around each other. People need to really, really, really be in a situation where they can really have that release to just get out there and have fun, man. You know, and especially with the way we've lost a lot of artists, we need to see our legends out there.
Well, you can look out for that JD and Dire Lansky and Squeak World Tour coming soon, nationwide.
We're here for it. We're here for it, absolutely.
So I got to salute y'all, brothers. I got to make my exit. I appreciate y'all time, like always. I appreciate you letting me speak and talk all this shit on your airwaves, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Hey, man, if you get in touch with Yuck, tell him we on live right now. We about to go on a little music break, so he can call up when he's free.
Okay, cool. I'll send him a text.
Yep.
Salute y'all. Definitely, you know, we'll be in touch, you know that. Y'all brothers, take care of yourself.
Definitely, Dyer, you too.
Yep, peace, peace.
Peace.
Yes, sir, we Bob, man. Now, before we go on a little music break and possibly with Yuck Mouth come on, we got to talk about the elephant in the room, man. We talked about this last night. We talked about what is it over for Deontay Wilder? That's the million-dollar question. Is he going to just – I want to hear Giannis' opinion because I have mine.
Well, King, we talked about this before, my brother. We said this before, and I've said it before. I love Deontay. I love what he stands for in terms of, you know, really reference for the hood, you know, and always being a fighter for us, a warrior, you know, for the people. But the fundamental, but if we look at it from strictly the science of pugilism and the academics of boxing, Deontay can punch, but he doesn't have those boxing skills that are necessary. Tyson Fury showed me both of those last two fights that he is a true boxer. And when you're in a situation of dealing with somebody who really understands the science, the strategy, the discipline of what it means to be in a fight, and when they have prepared themselves physically and mentally and fundamentally in terms of knowing what they have to do to win, if you can't go, you cannot go halfway in a situation like that. You know, a lot of people don't like Mayweather, but I tell you one thing, in terms of fundamentals, and if you watch Mayweather, beneath the bravado and the braggadociousness, Mayweather is one of the most technically proficient, fundamentally sound fighters I have ever seen fight. You know, there's a reason why Floyd Mayweather is 53-0, and it ain't by accident. And when Deontay had the chance where Mayweather offered him last year to train him and Deontay turned it down, it just showed
that's
me
the ego.
Deontay, yeah, and it showed me that Deontay really thought that what he was doing was going to work, you know. And I'm like, dude, you're going to get a lesson from one of the greatest ever, arguably the greatest ever, and you're not going to take that? When you're facing a guy like Fury who exposed that deficiency in that last fight, and you're not, and you didn't even have to ask Floyd, money Mayweather came to you and offered it, and probably Mayweather would have even charged him anything for it, and if he did, it was going to be at a cut rate. But I'm like, this is one of the greatest ever, and he's offering his help to you. The money is not an issue for what you're going to make if you were taking that training and won that fight, or at least made a good showing. So what we have now, King, is Deontay got put down. Does it change my respect for him? Absolutely not. I still respect him as a man. I respect what he stands for. But in terms of when we look at the business aspects of what it means for him being that top-notch draw, just like with Anthony Joshua losing last week, he's just not that draw anymore. I'm going to just keep it brick. There's nothing they can market him behind. He was beat decisively in his last two fights by the same opponent. And they can't,
he's fallen too far down that ladder that they can't push him up anymore. So will he box again? Perhaps. Will he be that main eventer? If he does, it's going to be a long while before he gets there again.
I agree, because it was like I was saying in the video. The minute, I'm going to tell you what happened to him. The last fight broke his confidence. The minute you get that first hit, you're not going to be the same fighter.
Right.
As I've seen it happen with a lot of fighters. Remember what happened with Roy Jones?
Yeah.
Man, he got knocked out the first time, he was never the same fighter.
Remember Zab Judah after Costa Zu put it on him?
Zab Judah? And who else? Hector Camacho, when he went a distance for the first time and started getting hit, he started fighting. He started changing his whole style.
Right.
And he wasn't the same fighter. It's like when you get that first hit, you're not going to be moving in a different way that you were moving. And this is what happened with him. He's still in the back of his mind trying not to really get hit. So he felt he had to pretty much adjust his whole style. And that ain't even work.
Well, the thing is, King, is that Deontay, I tell anybody, you still don't want to take a punch from that guy because he'll put you down with one punch. But when you're dealing with a guy like Fury, who is strategically positioning himself from defense and offense to where he knew how to counteract any, you know, punches being thrown at him, Deontay didn't have anything to counteract what he was doing. You know, Deontay was still looking for that haymaker, and he got him a couple times. But one thing about it is he couldn't keep him down. And when you give someone your best shot and they still get up from it, you're wondering, what else can I do? And Deontay just, it just ended the way that it did for him in the aspect of he just, it's not, you're dealing in some situations where some people are just going to be better at what they do or what y'all both do than what you do. And Fury just showed that he's better. There's no shame in it. You know, they're just, you know, it's like, you know, when you're dealing with certain, where you're dealing with quarterbacks in the league, where you're dealing with players in the NBA, you know, you're going to have somebody who's good, you know, and then you're going to have somebody who's good like Jameis Winston, and then you're going to have somebody who's great like Patrick Mahomes. You know, it's, you know, that's just how it goes. Some guys just have it more than others. Doesn't mean you don't deserve to do what you do, no, because you obviously did something to get there, but not everybody has the same set of skills as somebody else has. Not everybody understands what they do, what is needed to be done to win more than the other person. And some people are just more naturally gifted. It just happens.
Exactly. So where does he go from here? Do you think he should retire? You think he could beat a few tomato cans and then call it quits? Because right now he's 35 years old. And it seemed like mentally he's not all there like he was before. Because just like I said earlier, getting knocked out like that changes you.
Some people react to it differently. You know, and everybody's going to say what they got to say for the time being, but the reality is that, you know, it eventually dissipates. Mike Tyson got knocked out by Buster Douglas, and nobody brings that up anymore. Nobody talks about it. Tyson is still loved. Nobody talks about that anymore. Nobody even really brings up the thing about him in Holyfield anymore. You know what I'm saying? With the ear biting. Nobody really brings that up. You know, I mean, over time, it dissipates. You know, and with, you know, Deontay, from a reputation perspective, everybody loses once in a while.
You know, and it happens. I would tell Beyonce, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not, I would tell Amanda, man, I can't tell you what to do, but if you retire, there's no shame behind it. You've made your money. You're in good health. You don't need to be in a situation putting yourself out there on the line physically, you know, in terms of taking punches to the head, and you don't need to. You know, it's okay to walk away from this because there's nothing else you're going to gain from it. You were a world champion at one time. You were a main eventer. You made your money. It's okay to walk away from it.
Exactly. Like, you got your bag, dude.
But it's dangerous for people, whether football, whether any contact sport, boxing. We saw what happened to Larry Holmes and Muhammad Ali when they hung on too long. We saw Holyfield get back into the ring, which was just somebody, nobody should have sanctioned that fight, period. Holyfield, 58 years old, he should have not been in the ring. There are situations where people are trying to hang on in a situation that realistically they need to let it go. Find the next chapter of your life and move on to that next chapter. But do not put yourself in danger where, you know, you have situations where ultimately your health and because, and from that your life could be jeopardized.
That's the thing, man.
But for some people, that's just very difficult, you know what I'm saying, because it has to do from an aspect of how they identify themselves. You know, that's, and because of what it takes being an athlete, especially doing it at a high level, psychologically you're conditioned. You got guys like Barry Sanders, Channing Crowder, who retired. Barry Sanders retired after 9 years in the league. Channing Crowder, I think he formerly played for the Dolphins, if I got it right. And he retired after, what, 5-6 years? You know, Chris Borland, you know, linebacker for San Francisco 49ers. I think he left after his third year. You know, he just said he didn't want to do it anymore. You know, it's okay if you feel like your calling is somewhere else. You don't want a situation where your fall from grace is so sudden, or in some cases, King, it's already been happening and everybody knows it except you, you know, but you don't see it until you actually hit those jagged rocks of reality. You don't want to be that guy that's still trying to hold on to past glory. It's okay to do something else. But the problem is for some people, they're not prepared to do something else. And, you know, when you look at, and I'm going to go there because he keeps doing foolish shit. When you look at Soulja Boy, Soulja Boy got millions of dollars. And he still can't leave the celebrity spotlight alone. He still wants to be out there, and the reality is his time has come and gone, and he can't deal with it. And I'm like, dude, you have made the money. You know, a lot of artists are never going to make, and you still doing all this silliness. You're going to rant on Kanye. You mad at Kanye because Kanye took off your verse on his record. You're mad at Atari because you didn't know you're mad at Atari because you didn't know the contract you signed with Atari was for digital currency, and then you saying Atari screwed you out of the fact of you not owning it when that was never the deal to begin with. But he doesn't know how to just sit at home and enjoy his money. And but he's addicted to the lifestyle. And he can't let it go.
Yeah, I mean, that comes with when people spend their entire livelihood in front of that camera, and them cameras eventually go away. You got to live at a peace with yourself. A lot of people can't handle that.
I never forget what Aaron Magruder of the Boondocks. Yeah, you're right. And I never forget what Aaron Magruder of the Boondocks said.
Then that comes the clout chasing.
Yeah. But Aaron Magruder said one time, if you want to stop being famous, just stop talking. You know, one thing about it is that, you know, you and myself, we both have a bit of celebrity with this show. We've been blessed to meet so many people. But even then, we know how to live our regular lives outside of this show. We're not somebody who just feels the need that we have to, you know, your hilarious antics on YouTube just add the branding of it just adds to the butter of the branding of what we do, because you give an added dimension. But by the same token, that's your on-screen persona for what you do. But in real life, you know, you're just, you know, the regular dude, you know, who lives a regular life, loves his family, you know, goes to work, does what he has to do, just like myself. And we don't try to live online doing silly shit for clout chasing. We have a brand with Off the Cuff Radio. You know, this is what we do. And before anything, we have to carry ourselves in a reputable fashion. And part of that is understanding what we are in terms of being men, being ambassadors for the culture, and understanding what we want to project from that. And when you have artists, when you have athletes who may be past their prime, that is hard for them. Because when you've dedicated so much of your life to a passion, it is legitimate for many because this is what they wanted to do. And you do it, but then you realize the tides have turned, the game has changed, another chapter of the book is closed. It's what am I going to do next? And for some people, that reality of having to do something next is difficult. I've been there myself before, so I know how it is when you have to transition from one thing to another. It's not easy. But if you have faith in yourself, know what your abilities are, and just trust God. You know, you're going to find your way into something else. I'm living proof of that. You know, so
facts.
But do not ruin your. I would tell any artist, any athlete, whomever, do not ruin your legacy over vanity. You know, don't do it. That last impression, you want to be like Jordan. And it wasn't even when Jordan came back, you know, he ruined his legacy. Jordan just loved playing. Jordan knew his legacy was secure. Jordan didn't come back for vanity. Jordan came back because he just loved playing ball. Did he do everything right in Washington along the way? No, he didn't. You know, but nobody talks about, because Jordan, even when he came back to the Wizards, was still playing at a good level. It wasn't the high level of Air Jordan, or even his second hitter. Well, he had a second iteration of Jump Shot Mike, you know, because he wasn't dunking like he used to, but Michael still could play. But you think about Michael when he retired in 98 after he hit that shot against Utah to win the finals. That's the impression a lot of people have of Mike. He hit the game winner and walked off into the sunset.
And exactly.
Was retired for 3 years. You know, that's how you want to do it. You want to be like John.
Nobody would have bring up the Wizards, Mike. Nobody really want to bring up the Wizards, Mike.
Yeah, you want to be like John Elway, win 2 Super Bowls before you retire, and then just walk away from it.
Big facts. But yo, what I want to do now? I'm gonna play one of the songs from Cocaine. Now,
okay.
If Yuck can't make it, we definitely going to bring him on possibly this month because, you know, he's probably on the run handling some business and stuff like that. that's no big deal because, you know, it's still love here at the end of the day. So he'll probably be here this month or this coming month. But I want to play this record here, you know, he did with the Fat Boys called Hush, one of the hottest records out now, man. Big shout out to Big Coke, man.
Definitely, man. Buddy Boy Entertainment in the house. Shout out to Uncle Coke, Anissa, the whole family. And we about to drop it on y'all. Let's get it.
Yes, sir. Here we go.
Yep. Ain't nothing wrong with different styles of music, but this is real hip-hop. Man, tell this little kid, man.
And then hip-hop is the freedom of expression, but you got to keep it in perspective. What we're going to do right now is show you how we do our brand of hip-hop.
Man, you ready to learn? Come on, nephew. Let me show you some real hip-hop.
Transform.